friends, and welcome to episode number 286 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. It's the season previews. Woo. We're previewing the bench today. It's Patrick and Justin. And before we get started on this, I mean, if you like what we do, follow us at BFMD Podcast. Special shout out. I've noticed this. I've been paying attention to Instagram a little bit more this week. Shout out to our old buddy, Clayton Croker.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Love seeing his content
Bony Watch
pop up. Yeah, it's all great. He's got his own podcast now.
Yep.
I think. And it would be a blast to have him back for an episode here and there. We'll see. Maybe that's possible. That would kind of be fun. But it's great to see him back. Go ahead and give him a follow. He's easy to find on social media. But yeah, big part of our first 97 episodes, Clayton.
That's for sure.
Shout out to him.
Shout out to Clayton.
Shout out to the bench of the Toronto Blue Jays. We got a lot to talk about today, and we're going to get right into it. I think it's what,
seven players we'll discuss today. Six who will be normally on the bench, plus we're going to discuss our likely backup catcher to start the season today.
That's right. So hopefully you liked our first episode. We're bringing them to you rapid fire this week, as we always do. These are our preview episodes. I don't think we're going to have a prediction episode this year. I think we're kind of doing it all
at the same time. Yeah.
How about this? We'll bookmark it for when we finish the bullpen episode. We'll do lightning round.
Hot takes.
Yeah. We'll do our hot takes. They're always ridiculous. They're always stupid. There's always one that I hit 500 feet over the green monster, and then I strike out most of the rest of them. But there's always one that I crush. Every year, there's one that I crush, and then the rest is just baloney. So, yeah, without any further ado, let's get right into it. We're calling it the other guys, the bench. We'll start off with somebody who's very near and dear to Justin's heart. And I will let him take the lead on this one. It is Kevin Biggio. Let's talk about baby Biggio.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Like you said, I love this guy. Obviously, not enough plate appearances at the big league level to qualify for Savant Metrics last year, but finished this season incredibly strong, Patrick, and has likely put himself into a second base platoon with Davis Schneider this year. Obviously, being opposite-handed with the bat helps there. But also having the positional flexibility. Kevin Biggio is essentially the second baseman, backup third baseman, backup first baseman, and backup right fielder. Like, this guy can play all over the place for the Blue Jays, which is huge. Last year, Patrick, he had an insanely good second half. He actually hit .272 in the second half last year. And if you look deeper at his advanced stats, or not even his advanced stats, but his on-base percentage was at .404. And his slugging percentage is only at .361. So his power numbers are still a little down, but that was good for a 124 WRC plus for Kevin. And that was through the second half, which were his last 183 plate appearances of last season. He had just over 300 overall. So very good finish to last season. The power has dipped a bit, but if we can see Kevin hit for a bit of a higher average, Patrick, and of course we know why that helped last year with the shift being gone. It was a big help for his batting average. But he got back to being a bit more aggressive. He took a few fewer walks than we've seen Kevin take in the past, especially in that second half. But a little bit of aggression never hurt anybody every now and then. Sometimes you see a first pitch heater, and instead of taking it right down the pipe, you hit it into right field. So not a bad thing there. I like that he's come into the spring and has hit relatively well again. He's hitting .286 through his first 28 plate appearances. Not much power to show for it. Actually has three doubles out of his six hits so far, but no home runs. I'd like to see him get back to stealing some bases. He hasn't done that really since 2019 when he broke into the league. But he has a very good career rate. He's 30 for 33 in his career, and I think he still has 76 percentile sprint speed. If he can get on base at that 400 batting or 400 clip that he did in the second half, could see this guy get close back to 15, 20 stolen bases again. So looking forward to seeing what he can do. I hope he can come into the season hitting well. Last year got demoted to Buffalo after some injury issues. And I think this guy still has something that this team needs, and I'd be shocked if he has a bad season, honestly.
So, a couple things. The first thing I want to point out is that despite the fact that he only had 338 PAs, he still hit 9 home runs last year.
Yeah, that's so fine.
I don't even know if we could say the power is down. 9 home runs over 338 PAs.
It's about 18 over 600 if you just kind of...
Yeah, give or take. I think you're right.
His personal best was 16 over 430 in his first season in 2019. So
yeah, and the thing is, he has been up and down as far as trying to maintain his roster spot. There's been times where he's been down in Buffalo. Last year he had the worst April imaginable, where he hit 111 and 48 PAs.
Yeah.
But then he bounced back with a very strong May, a decent June, better for average July, but lower OPS. And then there was a bit of a dip in August, and then in September he was excellent.
Yep.
So kind of up and down for him. The way that I see it is that Cavan has excellent plate vision.
Yeah, that can't be debated.
He can draw walks as well as his old man, the Hall of Famer. The power is there. Cavan always does better when he has consistent PAs.
Correct. As most players do.
When he's in and out of the lineup, up and down, it has... Yeah, but it seems to be more emphasized with Cavan. Where if he does, sit out a few games in a row, it screws everything up. And I think this is the year where he's going to be called upon to have at least 400, 450 PAs. I don't see how
interesting
the Jays can have what they have for their third base aggregate plan and Biggio ride the pine as much as he has the last 3 years. Now, granted, some of the last 3 years, there was an injury, I believe, at least once.
Yeah, a couple times he's been hurt, yeah.
There were a couple times where he was down because he had to go down because everybody else was outplaying him. But like last year, if he has a season similar to what he had last year, except at 400 PAs, that's excellent. I would take that, a 710 OPS. 700 OPS is the new 800 OPS. OPS is across the league have dipped quite a bit in the last 3 or 4 years.
Agreed.
What we saw out of Cavan last year was pretty damn good, and I don't expect that his OBP will be as low as what it was last year. It for him, it'll always be at least 100 to 120 points above because of how many walks he draws. And that's the difference, is that instead of him hitting a single, he gets a walk.
Yeah.
And for Cavan, we don't care as long as he gets on base. I do think with a slug of 370, there is a lot of room for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be tough because he hits left. Excuse me. I think I swallowed a bug. And obviously the changes to Rogers Center aren't going to help him. But he should feast at Yankee Stadium. He'll get those opportunities. And I think this will be the year where he gets 450 PAs. And he could start doing some real damage. I like him on this team. I don't see him going anywhere. I don't see the reasoning. His next contract after all of his arbitration years are used up should be pretty on par with IKF or lower, probably lower. IKF comes with a much higher pedigree of defense. But Biggio, you could argue Biggio is a better hitter or has the potential to be a better hitter. I don't know, but I'm very happy with Cavan on this team. I think he's worth a roster spot, and I think that I think 450 PAs next year is a big jump up for him, and I think he's going to do some damage.
Love to see it.
I expect him to hit probably 7, 8, 9 somewhere in there.
Oh yeah.
Probably not 9. Probably seven or eight.
Be potential leadoff guy if Springer gets a day off too with the on base skills. So.
Yeah, him drawing a leadoff walk at the start of a game is
He'll play quite a bit against right-handed pitching. The Jays have a few obviously decent options at left-handed bat to work into the lineup there with Varsho, Kiermaier, Biggio being the main lefties on this team, along with Nathan Lucas potentially working his way into the lineup on occasion if he breaks camp as the fourth outfielder.
But
we'll talk about him. But yeah, he's gonna play a lot against like tough righties if they decide to give, say, IKF a day off at third base, you know?
His play vision, his versatility in the field, although he's not as strong a fielder as he once was, and his speed make him very valuable. He's got wheels, and he doesn't get to use them very often. Only 5 stolen bases last year. I think he's capable of something similar to 20 home runs and 10 stolen bases if he had, like, a full year.
Agreed.
And 450 PAs is great. It's the Davis Schneider is kind of an X factor, and we'll talk about that later in the show. But whichever one is playing better is probably going to be the one in the lineup, and they will take advantage of matchups.
100% they will.
You will see Biggio get some juicy opportunities, especially in Yankee Stadium. I'm very interested to see how he does.
Yep. All right. Next up is the aforementioned Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Patrick, a guy that was signed in the offseason here and really expected to play a lot of time at third base, but also does have a career experience playing around the infield as well as in the outfield as well, too. He did play center field sometimes for the Yankees last year. So a guy who can kind of play everywhere. Last year, he played second base for a game with the Yankees. He played 31 games at third base. He played only one game at shortstop, as they do have Anthony Volpe there. Also played 37 games in left, 41 in center, and 7 in right. So a lot of games all over the diamond. He'll be another super utility guy. The Jays love these type of guys. He has won a Gold Glove before in his time with the Texas Rangers. So a guy who has a very good history at the glove, and that Gold Glove was won at third base, Patrick, in 2021. So worth noting. Great fielder. Arm strength is not that strong from what I've seen in the spring training, but he makes all the routine plays.
Well above average fielder.
He's a very good fielder. This is why the Jays signed him. They're betting on a lot of bounce back years, as we talked about in our previous episode from a lot of the main bats. So they're bringing in a lot of guys who will be, you know, great defenders and hopefully have some competitive at-bats. IKF's career OPS is only 660 across 6 seasons in big leagues, so he's not going to win you a lot of games with his bat, but he's not going to lose you games with the glove, which you love to see that. Predictions for this season for this guy, I mean, Fangraphs has him getting around 450 plate appearances with an OPS of 656. Which again would be right around his career average. 16 stolen bases, though, hitting predominantly like 8th, 7th, 9th in the lineup, somewhere down those bottom three, along with Biggio and Kiermaier. That bottom three in the lineup, if it is KK, Kiner-Falefa, and Biggio, those are guys who can wreak havoc on the base pass. They've all got a decent to above average speed. Obviously, Biggio has the best on base skills of those guys. But they're an interesting bunch down there, because they could really cause some issues if they can get on for the top of the order for the opposite team. So we'll see how that goes. But I don't know. Again, a lot of people griping about the contract terms here. A couple of years for Kiner-Falefa, paying him $7.5 million per. People say, oh, he's just a more expensive Santiago Espinal. Yeah, you're probably right. But at the same time, he plays Gold Glove defense, and he was signed early in the offseason before the market took a nosedive. So it's tough to gripe about it. The Jays went out and did a lot of business early and people would have been mad if they would have waited. So we'll see. Like, it's just, there's six of each, half a dozen of the other. I'm expecting like a career average hitting season for him, right around that 650 OPS, single digit home runs, five or six probably. But if he can play that great defense, the Jays will hope that they can make up for the lack of offense for him in other areas.
Well, he had a huge dip in PAs last year. I don't know if it's because of injuries or poor performance, but I just don't remember. I expect that 242 average represents significant career low. Like, I don't think he'll hit nearly that bad. I expect 260 to be the baseline for him. OBP will probably be around between 300 and 310. Yeah. The slug, if we got a three-year high of 357 at slug, yeah, that'll put us around 660, 670 maybe. And I'll take the over on six home runs.
Okay.
he is a right-handed bat. I mean, if he leans into what he's best at, yeah, I could see him. I'd like to see him use his wheels more. He only had 14 stolen bases, but again, it was
got good on base for that. Yeah,
almost 250 less PAs or something like that, less than what he'd had the year before. So, the average number of stolen bases is still there. I think this will be an interesting moment in time for the Jays. They have not been very good at stealing bases for a long time. And having that triple threat down at the bottom of the lineup with Biggio, IKF, and Kevin Kiermaier combined.
And then you look at it too, turning it back over to Springer, who had a career high in stolen bases last year as well.
If they can get 30s. Aggressive,
yeah.
Then, and maybe Don Mattingly knows a thing or two about this, that could really keep keep things moving.
Well, and
we might see a different version of the offense.
Yeah,
this isn't a home run slugging team.
We've talked about it, right? Like, we know that this team may struggle to find offense, and in cases like that, you've got to manufacture, and that's where the stolen base may come into play for the Blue Jays this year. Is they're going to need to find ways to score, and maybe that stolen base makes a big comeback for this team. We'll see.
The Jays are they're turning into how do we photocopy the Tampa Bay Rays playbook? That's pretty much what they've been.
The Rays with twice the payroll.
Yeah. Getting it done, just it costing twice as much. That's classic Blue Jays baseball. Yeah, IKF, I'm fine with the signing. I did expect that they were going to sign or trade for an everyday third baseman. The fact that they didn't is disturbing.
Yeah.
But maybe once they realized Matt Chapman was not an option, this was their way of being like, we're just going to have to hold the line until Orelvis Martinez is ready.
Or Barger or whoever.
Or Addison Barger, whatever it is. But anyway, I have no problem with IKF. The signing, it sucks relative to what could have been. But again, this team is trying to build itself a certain way, and I think people need to stop trying to have that expectation that this is the 2015 Jays that are all about hitting home runs and all that. So that's just not the way the team is anymore. And IKF is the kind of player that fits on this team very well. So if he has a season similar to 2021, sign me up. That's a win. I'll take it.
Yep, let's give him a shot. I mean, worst case scenario, the Jays, maybe they trade him at the deadline. Let's say Orelvis or Barger is really pushing the way to the big league level. He's a guy who other teams will still show interest in because of the fact that he can play every infield position except first base and all three outfield positions. Like, this guy has...
Yeah.
And I think he was even drafted as a catcher originally, if I remember correctly. He actually has catching stats for 2018 and 2019. He wasn't very good. But it's this guy is another one of those classic drafted as a catcher but was moved to other positions, just like Dalton Varsho. So,
here's the other thing to keep in mind. Orelvis Martinez, again, he's in the pipeline. So,
yep.
And he's 22 years old, and he's already in AAA, and he was outstanding in AAA last year. A little bit of patience when it comes to his development will pay off for this team. And next year, even next year, Aurelvis might make this team. So, like, you've got to recognize the fact that the Jays have a lot of depth at third base. They don't have that all-star guy right now. Mm-hmm. But they also might be able to get away with not paying Matt Chapman $22 million a year to hit under 200 for 5 months. Anyway, moving on. Kevin Kiermaier.
Stupid, fan sexy favorite. Kiermaier. Yeah.
There's been a lot of years in a row where we've had a sexy man named Kevin on this team. We had Kevin Pillar, and now we have Kevin Kiermaier.
Well, we have Kevin Gausman, too. Don't forget.
And we have Kevin Gausman, too. I mean, what is it with Kevins on this team? Anyway. KK, last year, boy, did he deliver more than what I was expecting.
No kidding.
8 home runs, 14 stolen bases, batting average up about 40 points to 265, OBP up about 40 points to 322, slug up about 50 points to 419, good for a 741 OPS, that's a three-year high.
And don't forget, he won a Gold Glove in center field.
Gold Glove winner, he is one of the best fielders in baseball still.
Yep.
The arm strength isn't quite there. He's about a little bit of shade above average, but as far as fielding goes, and
yeah, his range of speed. He's the best right now.
He's the tippy top.
Him and Varsho make it look easy out there. It's from some of the fielding adventures we've seen in previous Jays seasons from guys like Teoscar and Gurriel out there. Last season there were no adventures taken. It was a joyous, straightforward ride when those two guys are out there. The ball's hit in a spot where they can catch it, they're probably gonna catch it. Kevin Kiermaier, of course, you remember the very first game at home, took that home run away. Like the first batter of the game. Like it's the guy immediately became like a fan favorite. He said last year he wanted to be the best 9-hole hitter in baseball. He may have done it in terms of what he brought offensively.
Pretty damn close. Yeah. He did get cool.
Yeah, he cooled off. He cooled off after the incident where he mangled his arm in Fenway and had to spend some time on the IL. I think having to stop when things were going well, it really it slowed him down quite a bit.
Yeah. That being said, pretty consistent throughout the season.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that rocky August, like you said, that was impacted by him getting mangled injured, by the wall. Probably would have finished the year with an OPS closer to 755.
You know what he said this year, Patrick? He wants to hit more dingers this year. Hit some hits more power.
How's this man going to do it?
Start pulling the ball, baby.
Even if he pulls the ball. Well, I could see him feasting at some of the other parks in the AL East, but certainly not in Toronto with the changes.
Not in Toronto or not in Fenway. Maybe the pesky
certainly
pole, but.
Certainly in the other three parks.
Yeah,
but here's the thing, and he's always hit well in Tampa.
Of course.
Here's the thing. He's a defense first player.
Yep.
Okay, he's not in this lineup to generate offense, but he will.
Yeah,
and he's going to.
The projections have him getting 441 plate appearances this year. A full-time player gets near 600 or more. Like they have Vladdy projected at 665 on FanGraphs this year, playing every day. Basically, I think that would mean.
What's KK's ding dongs for?
Projection is 8.
I'll take it. How many stolen bases?
They say 11, which is
take it.
Probably pretty good. So I mean,
take the over on that. Though.
Yeah, he had 14 last year, stolen bases and 8 home runs. So they're projecting pretty much a similar line.
Average.
The average looks like they're saying 244 it will drop to this year.
No, it won't drop that much.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, if his career average is 249, so it's pretty much in line. His career, his season projections look pretty much in line with his career norms. So I'm not keen on saying over or under on this guy. I think, if he can come anywhere close to what he did last year, keep re-signing him until he doesn't kind of thing, until somebody in the minors starts to push. But the Jays don't have a ton of outfield prospects. I'm looking at Kevin Kiermaier and saying like, hey, like if this guy can play 3 to 4 out of 5 days. You know, if the Jays are going to give him frequent off days, especially if there are tough lefties on the mound, Varsho will slide into center field. Varsho is kind of more the everyday player between these two guys due to the fact that he has the more power.
Yeah.
You've got to get, like, they have Varsho projected at 595 plate appearances, so basically playing every day, which makes sense to me. So I think, yeah, Kevin Kiermaier is going to be the essential, like, 60 to 75% everyday center fielder. He'll play a lot, but he won't play every day, which is fine because they need to keep him healthy as well. He was healthy last year outside of the mangling. He played the most games that he had played since 2019. So good to see.
Yeah, I think he'll. I think his season will be almost a photocopy of what it was last year. I don't expect
copy paste, baby. We'll take it.
Significant dip, yeah. And I think he'll. I think his popularity will go even higher this year.
Babe Schneider, Patrick Marsh, one of the most legendary Major League Baseball debuts of all time last year at Fenway Park, hitting a dinger in his first AV.
Is this true, though? Let me ask you a question, because this has come up. I've seen it a lot in Blue Jay circles, but I have seen it elsewhere, too, where people say that his debut last year was one of the best of all time. Is that true?
How could it not be? Look what he did in, like, his first few games.
2F4 in 35 games.
Yeah, his very first game, Patrick, he was 2-for-5 with a dinger. I mean, like, and then his second game, he was 3-for-4. His third game, 4-for-6 with another dinger. Like, he came onto the scene and was hitting, like, 800. Pretty good first series. Yeah, he hit .276 over 141 plate appearances last year. Played, came up on August the 4th and stayed with the team the rest of the season. He did cool off a little bit towards the end of the season as pitchers and other teams started to make
his
adjustments.
His September was bad.
Yeah.
He hit 154.
Yeah, look at his September. I mean, yeah, he came 174 September 1st to the end through the first couple of games of October. Yeah, the first game of October. He had,
but his OPS was still .673 despite
two home runs over that time, 8 doubles. I mean, yeah, he was still producing offensively, a little bit of power. He had even though he only hit .174, his WRC plus was still .105. So yeah,
his August saved this team's ass.
Yeah, yeah, really, he was one of the big reasons down the stretch that this team was still in contention. They needed an offensive spark, and luckily for the Blue Jays, he delivered it. He's likely going to break camp with the team. Hasn't been confirmed yet, but based on everyone that they've been sending down to the minor leagues. Like Barger is no longer there. Elvis is no longer there. They traded Espinal. Like, he's on the team. Like, it's going to happen. Fangraphs has him projected to get 357 plate appearances. So basically a 50% player. Makes sense. He's going to play a lot against lefties. They've got him projected at 13 dingers, a .231 batting average, and an OPS just below .770.
They expect his batting average to drop 45 points,
which
OBP
is probably fair.
About 60 points, and his slug about 200 points, which is...
Yeah, he's not going to slug 600. He's not going to have a 1.08 or 0.7 OPS this year.
But I'll take the over on all of the projections on Fangraphs. I think they're being quite...
Yeah, for what it's worth, the most aggressive projection is the Zips projection. They have him getting into 119 games for 500 plate appearances and hitting 19 home runs. But I don't think he's going to get that many plate appearances unless he either
gets
really hot or somebody gets hurt and or traded. So, but he's going to play. He's going to play quite a bit. He'll play, I think, every time there's a lefty on the mound, he'll play. And anytime there's, a matchup that maybe favors a pull-happy power hitter against maybe another righty, he'll play quite a bit. The holes in his swing, kind of the high fastball, he does chase not a lot, but he does when he does chase, Patrick, he whiffs a lot. Like, his whiffs, he didn't qualify on StatCast, but you can still see, or Savant, whatever you want to call it, is still StatCast, but his chase percentage is, like, very low, but his whiff rate is very high. He swings and misses quite a bit, so he's got to get a bit better at hitting the ball when he swings, a bit more contact ability. He's never going to hit for a higher batting average than he did last year. I think .276 was, he was .275 in Buffalo, so I mean he took a jump to the big leagues and he hit for the same average. You normally see guys hit a bit worse in the bigs, to be expected. I think that a 240 average is pretty acceptable for him.
I think he'll hit higher than 240, but I also think he'll feast a lot on left-handed pitchers.
Yes, 100%.
I don't think he will get any more than 350 PAs. Yeah, unless he gets super hot, and he discovers that he can crush righties. If that's the case, we'll see.
He still has some developing to do, but he'll do it at the big league level, which is sometimes the best place for a guy to be. But he'll be a very important part of this lineup, especially against those lefties, because he'll likely get some time in left field while Kiermaier and or Varsho sits.
I'll never be able to get over the fact that his debut was one of the best in the 150 year history of the sport.
It
blows my mind.
Yep.
And he had an ice cold September and still finished with a 1,007 OPS. That's insane. It's hard to put that in.
He's basically Danny Jansen with a mustache.
Very close to it anyway. But I see he's interesting because he's kind of the opposite type of player than what the team is trying to build, which is defense first, strong fielders, good at contact.
But the team knows, and we know, that in order to win baseball games, you still need guys who can mash, and he will fall into that latter category.
If he gets hot early in the year and can keep up like a good, strong rate of power, hitting dingers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be adverse to him hitting fourth or fifth. It might be very interesting to experiment.
And there may be days where he does against left-handed pitching. You know, he'll work his way up the lineup a bit higher there.
Could be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, next guy on the list today, Patrick, is a guy we've been championing all spring, Ernie Clement.
I'm so happy. Ernie Clement is making this team.
Yeah, it's all but settled now, it seems, that Ernie Clement will be on the roster.
What a spring.
Oh, great spring. Yeah.
The best spring. Like, he came in, he's playing for his life.
Yeah, he has no options left. He's either making the team out of camp or getting sent to the minor leagues. And our boy DFA'd, excuse me.
If he got DFA'd right now, it'd be the dumbest thing this franchise has.
Yeah, another. I don't know if they'll put it that high up.
It's pretty stupid. It'd be pretty stupid.
It would be ill advised, we'll say. Yeah.
Strongly ill advised. But I can't even talk about last year's numbers because it's only 52 PAs.
Yeah, it's tough, but.
It's not that. Yeah, they were, I mean, he hit, 380 last year in his 52 PAs.
That's correct. Yeah,
OBP he hit 380. Yeah, 0.6 F4. That's insane. And for 52 PAs, that's insane. Yeah. Decent fielder. This is a guy, he's my new, you'll love to see this guy succeed.
He's kind of the new Santiago Espinal, if you will, in terms of, a guy that you just, a role player who can become a fan favorite just by
he kind of reminds me of John Birdie.
Yeah, sure.
Where we went one way with John
Birdie.
A bit
less speed, but yeah.
And John Birdie went on to he's having
a good career in Miami. Yeah, he's
excellent career.
Turned
in Miami,
into a major
happy.
League player, which you love to see.
I see Ernie Clement, but he can hit. The man can hit,
and he's shown some power this spring, Patrick. The three home runs through 44 plate appearances in the spring. He did have 11 homers and 300 plate appearances with Buffalo before coming to the bigs, so he does have the ability to put the ball over the wall. It's not his primary skill set. He is an average first guy. He does not strike out a ton. Very good contact rates.
Got wheels.
He's got some wheels. He did steal 12 bases for Buffalo. He's got two so far this spring in those 44 plate appearances, 15 games played. So another guy for the Blue Jays who, again, can play every infield position and even has a little bit of experience playing outfield. Original Cleveland Guardians draft pick back in 2017. Last year, or 2022, was his first taste of Major League Baseball. He got up with Cleveland and then was traded to Oakland, I believe, or maybe even DFA'd and picked up. The Jays signed him to a minor league deal before last season. And he worked his way to the show at the end of last year. So, I mean, it's a guy who's been grinding since 2017 through the minor leagues and with limited MLB time. And last year he made the most of it over those 52 plate appearances, like you said, and he's going to get a shot this year. Again, he won't play a ton, but a guy who will be a reasonable pinch hitter off the bench. Let's say like they need to pinch hit for Biggio against like for a left-handed pitcher. Like it's a guy like him or Schneider will come in and do that role. 210 plate appearances is a prediction.
If he gets hot or stays as hot as he is right now in spring training.
Yeah.
One of the big things that we'll see in the lineup is he'll be bouncing between second and third because he can play both.
Yep.
And I think that's a signifier, but he won't play shortstop.
Yeah, if Bo gets a DH day, he would. But yeah, you're right.
And Bo likely won't get a lot of DH days.
No, he'll play every day.
Yeah, he'll be every day. But Ernie Clement can play second and third.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. he's already proven that he can hit for average and power.
I mean, I wouldn't say he's proven it, but he's showed the... He showed the potential.
It's there. Yeah. That's yeah. Okay. We'll say, walk it back and I'll say yeah. what you say. Yeah. He's got the potential. But I love that he's made this team. And worst case scenario, he is just a bench guy for us.
Yep.
Probably hang out the whole year, same way that Bradley Zimmer did for 2022, I think it was.
Yeah.
It feels like a million years ago.
It feels like a long time ago. Yeah. I wish it was longer ago.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very excited for Ernie Clement. Obviously, trading Santiago Espinal means Clement must be making this team.
Mm-hmm.
Super excited for him. I expect 200 PAs, but if he stays as hot as he was, he might actually start the year, the first few games, at third. He might actually be...
The Jays need to do that this year, like you're saying. They need to... put the guys who are playing well in the lineup for as long as they're playing well, you know, ride some hot hands where they can.
That's what I think is going to happen though. And I think Ernie Clement here's a bold prediction right in the middle of this episode.
Uh-oh.
Ernie Clement will be on the opening day roster. And he will be
bold.
In the opening lineup.
I don't think that, but I will say that he'll play.
Get ready.
He'll play game two.
Nope. Game one.
All right.
See you there.
Okay, sounds good. Editor's note here. While editing the episode, I noticed that we had missed talking about Daniel Vogelbach in this episode. We had him on our sheet and somehow just blitzed right past him as we were in a hurry to talk about Ernie Clement and Nathan Lucas for some reason. Daniel Vogelbach is likely going to make this team as a right-handed masher. He's a left-handed bat. He absolutely hammers right-handed pitching for power. Last season with the New York Mets, he was able to hit 13 home runs in 300 plate appearances against right-handed pitching. He did go 0-16 or 0-15 with one walk against lefty pitching, so he's not going to get opportunities there. This is purely a guy who will either start games at DH against very good right-handed pitchers. When Justin Turner is potentially, you know, getting a day off, he may even play the odd game at first base, but I'd be highly surprised if that happens. Vogelbach is on this team to be a big bat. He needs to hit home runs. He is, outside of Brian Servin, the most expendable player on this roster. If Joey Votto starts to get hot in AAA or the minor leagues, wherever he is playing at the time, and Vogelbach is struggling, you could see a swap made there. When Denny Jansen is eventually ready to return and Brian Servin is either DFA or, you know, reassigned to the minors, I think you'll probably see some juggling with this spot throughout the season. It's an interesting pickup. I know a lot of fans were like, well, why are we getting Vogelbach when there's already Vladdy, Turner, Biggio, who can play first base. Well, Vogelbach's not going to play a ton of defense. He's here to hit home runs, and that's about it. Next guy on our list here, Patrick, Nathan Lucas. We haven't really talked about Nathan Lucas a ton, but he's looking like he's going to be the fourth outfielder on this team, Patrick. We do have, obviously, that we just talked about the flexibility with Schneider, Clement, Biggio, guys who can all play corner outfield. Kiner Falefa, who can play center field. If the Jays do have a lot of outfield flexible guys, but Nathan Lucas is a primary center fielder and has been for his entire minor league career.
Talk about having a good spring, Justin.
Yes, another guy like Ronnie Clement who is pushing his way onto the roster and making the Jays' decisions a lot easier by doing so.
485 BABIP, that's sustainable.
That's, yeah, 432 batting average as well, 189 WRC plus with no home runs. We'll add there too.
Zero
a little, little league home run though.
But he's the thing is, he's out there and he's turning the lineup around.
Yes.
He's scored 8 runs in those 15 games. And with a 488 OBP and a 595 slug, like, yeah, congratulations, you made the team. You're definitely the fourth or extra outfield or whatever you want to call it that the team was looking for. Last year, he was not, if we'll be honest, he wasn't really that impressive.
No, he was not.
But he had an excellent, super strong season in AAA.
He did.
In 222 PAs, he hit 366.
Yeah.
He's as ready as it gets.
Yeah, and he's 29, he's got to make it happen here.
He was ready in 2021 when he hit 300 in the Tampa system. So, at 29 years old, he's 2 years overdue to be an MLB platooner or bench bat. And he's been so good in spring that I actually feel more confident now than what I did last year when he came up and he struggled significantly. Mm-hmm. This is it. He has marinated in the system for a couple of years. He marinated in Tampa's system for a couple of years. I think he's overdue. And I'm happy to have him on this team. And I think, probably 100 to 200 PAs at most, barring some sort of injury. And yeah, I'd be happy if we could get some stolen bases from him and maybe have him hit 250, 260, something like that. Yeah, I'll take it.
Agreed. Yeah.
He's got wheels.
I agree. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. The only bad thing I'll say about Nathan Lucas is that he's left-handed. He bats left-handed. He throws right-handed, but he bats left. The Jays already have two outfielders ahead of him on the depth chart who do the same. So it'll be interesting to see how they work him into the lineup, whether he's just late game replacement or if he gets any starts out there. But yeah, and unfortunately for him, he's the last bench spot. It's going to be a rotation to Buffalo a bunch probably this year for him, but I'm hoping that
that's
he can
hard
at least
to say, though.
It's not 100% true or certain, but it's likely, I would say.
Well, who replaces him?
Yeah, somebody who's playing well down there. It depends. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's going to depend on performance.
The options in AAA, they're all guys, all the top options all got non-roster invites as well, so... Yeah. You're looking at guys like Rafael Antigua, who's 26, Stuart Baroa,
and
Will Robertson, Cam Eden.
And there's no guarantee that Nathan Lucas makes this team either, because the Jays may still elect to bring, say, a Daniel Vogelbach or even a Joey Votto guy with them on opening day. I would say Votto less likely. Vogelbach more likely due to the power. But I think we'd like it to be Nathan Lucas.
It will be Nathan Lucas.
His spot is the least secure at this point in time, of course.
That is correct. Actually, no, I would disagree with that. I think Zach Pop's position on
I'm talking about offense right
amongst,
now.
Amongst the hitters, absolutely. Yeah.
Zach
Nathan
Pop
Lucas
doesn't swing bats, unfortunately, for him. So
probably thankful for that. That's gone now,
But the last guy we're going to talk about today, very briefly.
One more thing, Justin.
Ahead.
I want to talk, there's one, because we talked about there is a lack of strong outfield depth. There are a few players that are working their way up the system right now who will, in about 2 to 3 years, give us the depth that we lack right now, and that's Desson Brown and Gabriel Martinez.
Yep.
Those two guys are a little far out. Desson Brown projects to be AA. Gabriel Martinez might see a promotion this year. He's left field and right field, while Desson Brown is center and left. But those other guys, the four guys that I mentioned who are non-roster invitees, are probably going to be the AAA outfield. And there's not, no offense to them, but they're, you know.
Yeah.
They're in AAA. But
fair enough. All right.
I just wanted to add that in.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, and you're right. Yeah, there is a lack of depth. But the Jays have all the outfield flexibility on the Major League roster as well with a bunch of guys we've just mentioned. Last guy we'll discuss today is Brian Servin. It's either going to be him making the lineup as a backup catcher, or Danny Jansen may make a miraculous appearance. But Brian Servin has had a decent spring for the Blue Jays as a non-roster invite. Claimed off waivers from the Cubs in January. He was originally drafted by the Colorado Rockies. Does have a bit of MLB time the last couple of seasons, Patrick. Nothing to write home about offensively. We've talked about him very recently here. But he'll catch until Danny Jansen comes back, maybe 2-3 games, depending on how much they want to work Alejandro Kirk to start the season. But he'll be a guy who's easily DFA when Jano is back. So, yeah, they'll have to add him to the 40-man. That's the spot that was freed up by trading Espinal. That's probably the likely candidate for that for that 40-man spot there. And then they'll have a bunch of guys who start the season on the IL, but we'll talk about that when we get to the pitching show. But it's looking like Servin will maybe get, like I say, 3, maybe 4 games before Jano's ready to come back, if the timeline is accurate. But don't expect much from this guy. He's a minor league hitter with a little bit of pop, not a lot of batting average, but seems to play decent defense and has had, he's hitting .217 this spring with 3 home runs. So if he can provide a little bit of offense, that'd be fine. But the Jays are just need a body back there to catch the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really all you can say about him, really. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, the Jays, while they don't have, let's say, like the bench doesn't have a ton of power potential outside of Schneider, they have a lot of guys who are just incredibly flexible, good defense. The bench, again, this is a lot of, I've used this point a lot. This bench isn't going to win you a ton of games, but they're not going to lose you much. Oh, excuse me. Oh, man. Frog in the throat all of a sudden.
Well, while you're battling the frog, let me just say, he started off with a pretty strong spring, and he's cooled off a little bit. He's down to .217 average there in 27 PAs, but he still has a .696 slug, which is not sustainable. I expect that to drop at least.
What are you talking about? That's incredibly sustainable.
I expect that to drop at least 300 points, if not more.
Yeah.
But yeah, he'll be a serviceable backup. He's just going to do exactly what Tyler Heineman and Luke Maley and Deonner Navarro and all them other guys over the years have done. Step in when they need to and then, you know, exit stage right when it's over.
Yeah, for sure.
He's on this bench for now, but he will. It's just a matter of time before Jano is back and
exactly.
Gives us what we need, what we want, what we crave, what we thirst for, which is Deadpool home runs.
What more can you say? Hit some dingers, pull some dingers this year. But yeah, that's it for the bench. And I'll cover the bats. We'll be back in the next episode to cover the starting rotation, followed by the bullpen, which with the current injury concerns will be interesting to start the year. But that'll be it for us today. For Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon, and we'll see you next time.